This is a Charles Russell Speechlees podcast.
Welcome to Property Patter.
My name is Emma Humphreys, and I'm joined today by Richard Flenley, who's one of my colleagues in our real estate disputes team, and by Heidi Wagstaff from our insolvency team. Nice to see you both, especially during these stay-at-home times. Hi, both.
Hello.
We've seen various restrictions on landlords' remedies introduced by the government to protect commercial tenants during the current COVID-19 crisis. In today's podcast, we want to talk about what these restrictions have meant in practice and what's on the horizon for landlords looking at the arrears owed now and the June quarter ahead. Richard, let's start with you. The crisis started with measures to prevent forfeiture and stay in possession proceedings. Have those measures been effective, and what have the recent amendments to the practice direction meant in practical terms for landlords and tenants?
Thanks, Emma. Whilst it was always a technical risk in the run-up to the March quarter day, it was unlikely that forfeiture of commercial leases was ever going to be seen across the board, particularly for tenants of usually strong covenant strength. There might have been some isolated cases, but landlords would undoubtedly have been nervous about having to find replacement tenants in the current market. And there was always going to be a risk of voids for a significant period and the consequent charges and losses that would be sustained as a consequence. It did, though, provide tenants with at least some comfort that failure to pay the rent would not automatically result in them losing their lease. Didn't mean that the debt fell away or that landlords wouldn't serve Section 146 notices as a prelude to forfeiture when the time came around that they would be able to do so. It also didn't stop other enforcement methods, such as using rent deposits and pursuing guarantors or commencing debt recovery proceedings, for example. I suppose of more substantial note was the introduction of Practice Direction 51Z, which stayed all possession proceedings for at least a period of 90 days up until the 25th of June, and potentially for longer than that. Originally, it looked as though that would only apply to housing cases on the back of the government announcements at the time, but ultimately it was far wider, and all possession cases, save for a very few types, including trespasser claims, interim possession orders and injunctions, are now stayed. So all the parties can really do during the stay period is seek to agree case management directions and lodge the agreed directions at court, those directions really coming in effect after the stay. So all this and the backlog of new cases will inevitably cause delays when the stay is finally lifted. So practically, that then leaves landlords in a situation where they know they're not really going to be able to do anything or push on with possession proceedings or with forfeiture. But it also leaves the tenants in quite a difficult position because they are still having to work out how they're going to operate in this current COVID-19 and then a post-COVID-19 recovery phase with all of these liabilities and debts hanging over their head.
Yeah, because it seemed to me really when that forfeiture announcement was made, you know, it sort of sent quite a strong signal, but I wasn't really sure of quite whether that was really the signal to send, given that, as you say, landlords, you know, in that market were going to be pretty unlikely to want to have the unit back anyway, weren't they?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Yeah. I think the announcements that were made obviously came as part of a package of announcements that were made to try to show, I think, the government's commitment to trying to assist and alleviate problems. You look at the examples of the furlough schemes, amongst others, along with access to finance, etc., that's government backed. I think all of that was, broadly speaking, came out around about the same sort of time. And so it was part of that message to the market, which was saying, look, we are doing what we can to try to alleviate your problems. But obviously, there's only so far they can go. The government couldn't step in and say, all of that rental liability that's going to come up in a few weeks' time or a couple of days' time or a few months' time now, that's all gone. Obviously, it can't. There's a contract in place. The contract still exists. There might be some opportunists who are out there trying to create arguments to use COVID-19 as a frustration event or as a force majeure type scenario. But that seems to be quite few and far between, and it's got to be pretty sceptical as to the ability for tenants to wipe off the value of the debt. So, yeah, I mean, whilst I think it was well-intentioned, the practical effect of it is obviously very short-lived, if effective at all.
Yeah, that was my feeling as well, but headlining stuff rather than practical difference, absolutely. Maybe. And on the practical side, I mean, from our experiences, and you and I have spoken a fair bit recently, and indeed with Heidi and the insolvency team as well. I mean, landlords obviously were trying to negotiate with tenants and tenants with landlords about suitable rent arrangements to try to get everybody through the current crisis. But unfortunately, we have also, all of us, been talking about some of the tenants who have looked to take advantage of the forfeiture moratorium. I think probably some of our listeners might be quite shocked, actually, at some of the tenants who are still trading who did not pay their rents in March.
Yeah.
And the result was then that some landlords served statutory demands and winding up petitions in relation to the sums owed. And now we have restrictions on those actions. Heidi, would you, being our insolvency expert on this,
I'll take it.
Do you want to tell us a bit about those proposed restrictions?
Yeah, so what's interesting is the government have proposed measures which essentially prevents landlords from issuing stat demands against commercial tenants, and that also includes issuing winding up petitions against those commercial tenants that cannot pay their rent due to COVID-19. It's an interesting move from the government. It's unprecedented, and obviously we're living in unprecedented times. So what the government has also said at the same time is urging tenants to pay where they can. So if they've got the cash to pay, they're asking tenants to keep paying the landlords, because they appreciate that this is going to have a knock-on effect to all commercial landlords as well. So the government will temporarily ban the use of stat demands between 1st of March and 30th of June, and winding up petitions presented from the 27th of April to the 30th of June via the Corporate Insolvency and Governance Bill. But that's not to say that the procedures can't be used if you are a landlord and you're in a situation where you believe that the reason that the tenant cannot pay is not due to COVID-19. But of course, that's going to be a factual determination for the court. So that's going to come based on facts presented before the court, and the landlord would probably have to prove that it was not a COVID-related non-payment. Unfortunately, we don't have much clarity at the moment on how this is going to work in practice. But what is expected is that if you have a landlord who wishes to present a winding up petition, they will have to make an application to court for permission to present the petition, and the court will consider whether or not it's appropriate in the circumstances. If it does, then the idea is that the petition will be able to proceed on the basis that it's not a COVID-related non-payment of rent by the tenant.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, isn't it, to see how that all comes through.
Yeah, it really interesting, especially because, you know, this isn't something we've ever seen before, certainly from an insolvency perspective and likewise a property perspective.
No, and the thing I find, you know, completely kind of really, you know, there's so much at the moment that kind of blows your mind, but is the fact that, you know, even though the government made its announcement on 23rd of April saying there's going to be these restrictions on stat demands and winding up petitions, and as you say, you know, these extra hurdles, but without any legislation in place or even in draft, you know, so nobody had any clarity about what is this hurdle, how is it going to work, and no legislation, nothing in draft even, and yet we've already seen some decisions from the courts indicating that they're willing to apply the restrictions before they are law. I mean, I find that amazing. And that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So as you say, it's not yet law. We don't know when it's going to be law. It's not even been discussed yet in Parliament. It's just been proposed. But the courts have effectively sought to apply it is as good law in some recent cases. So, for example, there was a recent case known as the Short Gardens case, where the court considered an application to prevent the presentation of a winding up petition. And this was in respect of multiple companies, which included a claim that the debtor companies had been adversely affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Mr. Justice Snowden, sitting in the higher court, denied the application. stating that it was overwhelmingly likely that legislation would only apply to companies in certain scenarios, being petitions presented by landlords against commercial tenants for unpaid rent. So he noticed that the reason that the debtor companies had not paid their debts was not owing specifically to the coronavirus epidemic, and that not all of the debts were for unpaid rent. So in those circumstances, the court applied the law, which effectively is not yet the law, in denying the applicant's request to have the winding up petitions, to have the landlords injuncted from preventing the winding up petitions, which was interesting. Conversely, there was another case recently, which is protected by a privacy order, where the court allowed an injunction preventing a landlord from presenting a winding up petition against a retail business, citing the government's announcement in respect of the intended legislation, holding that the court was entitled to take account of these intentions. So that was entirely despite the fact that this is not yet relevant law. So I think that particular case has had mixed reactions, and particularly because the two cases, you know, they have quite different results for landlord and tenants, and the court has effectively applied legislation which isn't yet in force, which, as you said, we've just never seen anything like it before.
Yeah. It's typical injunction as well, isn't it? Because, you know, injunction cases often throw up these really interesting issues. I mean, not usually quite as interesting as this, but, you know, fascinating, and you want it to go on to the next hearing or to the appeal or what have you, and probably the reality is this fight will be given up because the law will have moved on so much by then, and what will it matter by the time they get to that appeal or whatever.
Well, I think you're right, and I think it's so fluid at the moment that something things are just changing so rapidly that you know, by the time you've launched an appeal, you might be in a completely different position.
It's madness.
That's quite right. I mean, I think it's quite interesting that that we've obviously had, those of us that are old enough to have lived through a few of these.
You and me both, Richard, not Heidi.
Yeah, Heidi probably not so much, but you and me definitely. You know, where we've had all sorts of things happening, like the credit crunch, for example, in 2008. Now, the government could have elected to apply the same approach that they're applying at the moment to COVID-19 that would have helped companies and would have helped tenants potentially in 2008, but none of that happened. So it is quite interesting to see that even though operating retail occupiers back in 2008 were facing very, very significant and similar financial problems because of the lack of funding at that point being provided by lending organisations, that none of those protections put in place for that. But when we've got obviously a public health disaster, suddenly it's treated in a slightly different way. Whether, you know, that would still be applied in the same way now in another credit crunch in another few years' time, and so that there would be similar support there available for companies, I don't know, but it's obviously got to raise that spectre. I also think that what all of this does, and both the cases that Heidi referred to illustrate, is two key things. One is what we saw before any of the announcements happened in relation to statutory demands and in relation to CRA, was that because of the problems with social distancing, that was creating issues anyway for service of petitions and services of statutory demands and enforcement notices and enforcement agents becoming more and more reluctant to actually act on CRA notices. The second is that what landlords need to be very alive to is the type of tenant they have. So is this a tenant that's within the retail and hospitality industries? You know, they're the ones that are designed to have this protection. Others, as was seen in the Short Gardens case, are unlikely to gain the benefit of that protection. And then you have to look at the basis of the arrears and the reason for not paying. And the reason for being in financial difficulty is the classic analysis of the can't pay, won't pay argument. Just because arrears have been built up by a company operating in the retail space is not necessarily going to mean that you can't pursue a statutory demand or a winding up petition. It's going to require a much more forensic look at what the court's likely to do when faced with this particular case. Are there factors that take this outside of the protection that looks like it's going to come in legislation relatively shortly? Or is this effectively going to be a case for a landlord to have to look to his other options?
Mm.
And you mentioned CRA there, Richard, and as you say, the sort of how these sorts of remedies are actually working in practice is another hurdle that we've been dealing with. But we do actually have some legislative changes to CRA, some real legislation. So do you want to just cover what those changes are and again what they mean in practice?
Yeah, absolutely. We have some 2020 regulations to talk about. It's so very exciting. As you say, changes have been made to CRA.
Heidi's laughing at us. Yes, Heidi, this is what we get excited about. Yes, we are property litigators.
And this is very typical of an Emma Humphreys, Richard Flendy conversation. There is some laughter and some very serious debate at the same time.
Very serious debate.
One of the self-help remedies open to landlords is, as you say, CRA. It's used as a method of enforcement rather than seeking maybe forfeiture or court action. That remedy has changed a lot over the years. Used to at one point be known as distress until that was disposed of, replaced with this new way a few years ago of enforcing via this self-help approach and the service of enforcement notices and then the potential loss of items that are owned by the tenant to effectively allow the landlord to recoup some of the losses that they had sustained on rental income. So what the changes in the 2020 regulations did were really three things. One of those is fundamentally important for tenants, the other two may be slightly less so. The one for tenants really was that the threshold before CRA could be exercised in the first place was increased. And that was increased from the previous position of 7 days of rent arrears up to what is now 90 days for all enforcement notices given between the 25th of April and the 30th of June. Now, I'll stop there just for a second because obviously things move with this whole picture quite quickly. We now have the announcement recently from the government in terms of the potential way out of this lockdown phase that we're in at the moment. That would see some operators potentially being able to be working through May and June, potentially.
We've lost all sense of time, Richard. What month is it? What day is it?
I know, exactly. I have lost it between May and June. But many might not necessarily be in operation until July.
Yeah.
We've just seen that the furlough scheme has been extended. So that is going to last for a bit longer. Will, therefore, there be similar extensions to the dates in the current 2020 CRA regulations that extend that 90-day enforcement notice limitation to beyond the 30th of June. I mean, I think that's got to be a possibility. The other two changes made in those regulations were that there were extensions in certain circumstances to the date by which enforcement agents have to have taken control of goods if notices of enforcement aren't to lapse. And the other, again, is really for enforcement agents that they have to hold an enforcement certificate in order to be able to do the job that they do. And so there were, again, in certain circumstances, extensions to that period of enforcement certificate to stop them having the problems with renewals. I do query, though, how effective particularly the First Amendment will be in practice. Many tenants will already be a quarter behind in terms of their rental liabilities. They will likely soon be two quarters behind unless they've reached agreements for monthly rents, as an example, with their landlords, or have reached some other form of arrangement that means that they've managed to negotiate some variation to the terms of their rent payment obligations. So on that basis, absent negotiated agreements to the contrary, landlords will likely still be able to look at this option for enforcement if they can't do so already. If the government really wants to shake it up and provide further relief beyond that already provided, then I could see that 90-day period potentially being extended. That might start to cause landlords some issue with being able to use this as a means of recovery. Right at the beginning of this crisis, there were a number of queries coming through which I think I've probably worked with both of you on at different times, all around whether or not landlords were entitled to exercise CRA, how they were going to be able to exercise CRA with locked down premises, some landlords taking a very reasonable approach to their tenants' position, a number of tenants, larger tenants with multiple locations, were reporting very wildly differing approaches by their landlords, some working overtime almost to try to come up with an arrangement that would work given the uncertainty that was faced, others being quite difficult with their tenants. And so there was a genuine concern about how that might work. But obviously, during the heightened period of lockdown, that was relatively difficult for landlords, particularly if you were talking, for example, warehouse premises with no means of access because there was no one there. How are you going to get in to be able to exercise that right? So there's lots of other things that need to be thought about by landlords when looking at exercising CRA. This 90-day point is probably not one yet that's going to stop them in their tracks. They will still have the ability to do so. They were just going to have to review things on a case-by-case basis as to how effective a remedy it's going to be.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Everybody's circumstances are so different, and you know, we always say that. We always say you have to look at individual circumstances, but in the current crisis, it's more important than ever, I think, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
We are, I think, goodness, aren't we, in a very unusual landlord and tenant world. We've got restrictions on forfeiture, you know, delayed CRA, a ban on statutory demands, higher hurdles for winding up petitions. What do we think landlords and tenants should be thinking about now? Heidi, where would you start?
Well, I mean, I think Richard's just touched on it. And I think the key for both landlords and tenants initially is just trying to negotiate, just talking, opening up the lines of communication, considering what can be done to sort of ease cash flow issues from both perspectives. You know, for example, if you're a landlord, you could suggest that 50% of the rent is paid now and the remainder of the next 3 to 6 months. You know, all of those kind of suggestions are going to depend on the specific circumstances of each case. And obviously, as a landlord, you want to be mindful of the fact you don't want to be varying the terms of the lease in any way. But, you know, you can reach some agreements with tenants, which helps you over the short term deal with the issues. Again, from a landlord perspective, you could consider repurposing your retail space, which is something which I know even pre-COVID was something that sort of was being looked at from a landlord perspective. And in terms of tenants, I mean, they could adapt business models. You know, you could see a move for retailers to go online, particularly just during the COVID crisis, just to keep an element of cash flow whilst they're in difficulty. And then I suppose at the more extreme end, you, from a tenant perspective, you could look at informal insolvency procedures. You could look at company voluntary arrangements to try and help restructure your liabilities and reach agreements with creditors, including your landlords. Or if you have some more significant issues and you require the benefit of a moratorium, which prevents the creditors, including landlords, taking action, then you can consider administration. I mean, all of those are options, but I guess it's all on a case-by-case basis, depending on the circumstances of the landlord, the tenant, the business that they are both running. So it's all very case-by-case at the moment, I think.
Yeah, and the government's been encouraging parties, hasn't it, to you know, try and pursue that dialogue, try and reach agreements. And one point, Richard, I know you and I were talking about when we did our briefing note on this, were, you know, was the fact that actually tenants also need to bear in mind, you know, the government's encouraging this dialogue, and one of the reasons it's doing that is for a reason, because actually court proceedings are still an option for landlords in recovering arrears, and if those proceedings are issued, they would include, you know, claims for interest costs. Increasing the problem.
Absolutely, and I think the one of the problems with the government announcement about it, as opposed to anything that's within the regulations that we've discussed or within the legislation that's going to come in due course, is about some of the confusion that was created by the language used. So talking about things like, for example, retail tenants paying what they can pay, looking at what they can pay in the context of what is caused by COVID, what the difficulties they are that are facing, places quite a lot of uncertainty, both for landlords and tenants, in terms of, you know, looking at that can't pay, won't pay scenario and dynamic, and saying, well, is this genuinely a can't pay issue? Or is it just that the tenants are looking at what is quite a complicated and complex planning scenario that they're going through at the moment in terms of how they continue to trade over the course of the coming months? You know, what priority do tenants going through that planning exercise place on paying their rent as opposed to putting that money towards other things? And so I think that's a... You know, that's probably a less helpful sign of the guidance that came through. But you're right, any of the dialogue that is encouraged between landlords and tenants removes the possibility that landlords might bring action, and that if they do bring action, that ultimately that's only going to serve to increase the liabilities owed by the tenants. You talk about those sorts of actions, debt recovery proceedings, those are inevitably going to include claims either for contractual or statutory interest, which can be substantial, anything up to 8% and beyond sometimes. You're also substantial costs bills for dealing with the pre-action phase, the litigation, particularly if that litigation is then put on any kind of back foot because of any other regulations that come in over the course of the next few months. That's only going to increase liabilities. It's not a, none of this is a solution for tenants. It doesn't deal with the problem. It just postpones it and arguably increases the value of it at the point at which it can be paid.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that, I mean, as you say, there's so many issues for both sides in where we now find ourselves. But, you know, a lot of landlords didn't get much rent in March. Now June is on the horizon. So court proceedings are starting to be considered, as are other options. You know, apart from the option of court proceedings, what do we think? What else should landlords be thinking about now? I mean, we mentioned... we've talked about CRA, but you know, it seems to me still we've still, even with Boris's announcement about how we might get out of this, we've still got a lot of premises that are closed. Do we think that's really an option at the moment, Richard? What do you think?
I mean, I think it can be. As I said earlier on, I think it's a case by case approach, looking at different premises, different entities. The value of stock can be quite substantial. Particularly for some of the businesses that we've been helping over the last few weeks, looking at their portfolios and where their risk profile lies for action from landlords, and looking advising landlords on the other side of it in terms of which cases might be good cases for CRA. As the lockdown rules start to relax a bit more, and as we if the tight broad timetable that was outlined by the Prime Minister recently is followed, then obviously there's going to come a point at which premises start to reopen, and at that stage landlords are going to have that option. People are going to be working and people are going to be trading, and so money will be changing hands, goods will be changing hands, and so at that stage CRA is, I think, probably going to be something more worth looking at by landlords as time goes on. But we can't just get too caught up with CRA. There are obviously other things that landlords can be doing and looking at. They can be looking at guarantors. They can be looking at previous guarantors up the chain. They can be looking at subtenants who might be trading and therefore looking at routes to recovering directly from subtenants rather than the rental income being lost in the interrelationship between the subtenants and their immediate landlord.
I agree with that. That's the time for that, isn't it, really, now? Yeah, because absolutely. You know, June quarter, scarily, as we were saying, we've lost all sense of time, but June quarter actually is on the horizon. So if you've got subtenants, you know, thinking about serving those notices, as we've touched on, you know, there's practical difficulties with serving notices as it is. You don't want to leave them to the last minute. And actually knowing that you might have another source for that June quarter's rent might be quite valuable to landlords, mightn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely looking at subtenants is sensible. I think, there's obviously the questions over rent deposits. what the rent deposits are. There's obviously good benefits and disadvantages with utilising that rental deposit income for, you know, later challenges if need be. And the question of markover, or the ability of tenants to then make up those rent deposits at a later date. But I think landlords also need to be alive as part of that process. And as to, for, you know, upcoming break dates, the possibility that if they play the game too hard, that suddenly tenants are going to look to serve a notice where they might not previously have done. Again, leaving the landlord potentially, unless they can get through on a failure by a tenant to comply with break conditions, to losing their tenant and again having a void. So it does require this analysis on both sides of it to say, well, yes, these are the things that we can be doing, but do we want to be doing them now? Or do we want to ride this out and work with our tenants a bit more to try to reach an accommodation? Having said that, yeah, there are tenants that are just going to play a very hard game with their landlords. It's a fact of life. And so it may well be that landlords do need to look at some of those harder options as a means of making sure that their tenants realise that they are serious about being paid.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think you're right. I think it's weighing up your options as a landlord. And like you say, on the one hand, you don't want to be left in a situation where you have no one filling your space. It might be more desirable to have those negotiations and keep that tenant long term, albeit you might not be getting the rent in the short term. And I guess as well, the options for pursuing third parties is if you've got guarantors, you know, that can be really useful. But I guess in this global economic crisis, there's no guarantee that they're going to be financially viable and that they're not going to be having their own, you know, financial issues. And I think it's a bit of a minefield for everybody to sort of get their heads around at the moment, because there's almost just so many considerations to weigh up when working out the best route forward from both perspectives.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a bit like we were saying earlier, you know, it's, as Richard and I were saying, we can remember the 2008 recession, and it, you know, it's, I know it's a weird thing to say, but I sort of feel a little bit like, at least a lot of the people dealing with this current, you know, albeit totally unprecedented set of circumstances, actually a lot of them have very recent memories of how we dealt with that then, and yeah. And actually we've learned sort of what did and didn't work so well. And so I do feel as if, although this has been immensely challenging for landlords and tenants, and, you know, let's face it, yeah, everybody, you know, actually we've got a little bit more to back us up perhaps than we did in 2008, because 2008 was so, you know, unprecedented. Certainly, you know, we weren't old enough, Richard, where we should really remember before. So we're young enough for that.
Not that one.
There's a limit.
I'm not guilty of that one, though.
Oh, so yeah, it's, you know, that's one of these kind of, you know, things where you sort of try and look for some comfort somewhere, and you think, well, actually, you know, we have learned this. You know, as we touched on at the start, you know, one of the first things that I was asked about was monthly rent arrangements, and I was like, yes, let me just dig out my 2008 precedent. Fine. Well, thank you both. I think that's been a really good catch up on landlord remedies and where we are, and it's been really useful as well. Thanks, Heidi, for giving us the
pleasure. Thank you for having
perspective.
me,
and really nice to see how all the hairdos are coming on in lockdown as well. And thank you to our listeners for joining us.
This is a Charles Russell Speechleys podcast.